Day 435, Sunday, June 9th. Jonah 1:17. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah the son of Amittai, saying, Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa, and found a ship going to Tarshish, so he paid the fare, and went down into it, to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. But the Lord sent out a great wind on the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship was about to be broken up. Then the mariners were afraid, and every man cried out to his God, and threw the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten the load. But Jonah had gone down into the lowest parts of the ship, had lain down, and was fast asleep. So the captain came to him and said to him, What do you mean, sleeper? Arise, call on your God, perhaps your God will consider us so that we may not perish. And they said to one another, Come, let us cast lots, that we may know for whose cause this trouble has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, Please tell us, for whose cause is this trouble upon us? What is your occupation, and where do you come from? What is your country, and of what people are you? So he said to them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, Why have you done this? For the men knew that he fled from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. Then they said to him, What shall we do to you that the sea may be calm for us? For the sea was growing more tempestuous. And he said to them, Pick me up and throw me into the sea, then the sea will become calm for you. For I know that this great tempest is because of me. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to return to land, but they could not, for the sea continued to grow more tempestuous against them. Therefore they cried out to the Lord and said, We pray, O Lord, please do not let us perish for this man's life, and do not charge us with innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. So they picked up Jonah and threw him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and offered a sacrifice to the Lord and took vows. Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. Daily deep dive. The UCG reading plan states, as we saw in our previous reading, 2 Kings 14:25 shows that Jonah preached during the reign of Jeroboam the second. Was from Gath Hepher, and a town in the territory of Zebulun. See Joshua 19:10, Joshua 19:13, 2 Kings 14:25, several miles northeast of Nazareth. Nothing is known of his father Amittai. The name Jonah means dove. We associate the dove with peace and purity, however, this positive meaning is not the only possible association. A dove could also be a symbol of silliness. See Hosea 7:11, a description that sadly applies to this tragicomical prophet. Nelson Study Bible, Introduction to Jonah. The story of Jonah and the big fish or whale is one of the best known from the Old Testament. Many skeptics have regarded the story's miracles as folklore or allegory. Yet the validity and importance of the story are made plain by Jesus' own reference to it and the use of it as proof that he was the Messiah. Matthew 12, Luke 11:29-32. The book is unusual in that it only contains one prophecy, Jonah 3:4, and is actually a story about the prophet rather than details of his messages. The book of Jonah reveals a great deal about God's mercy. With regard to Nineveh, the Eerdmans Dictionary of the Bible makes this comment, Is God's salvation available even to such people? For God to be so concerned about the positive future of nations such as Assyria was intolerable to some. How could God think of saving a nation that had so devastated God's own people? Jonah herself is a type representing certain pious Israelites who posed such a question regarding the extension of God's mercy to the wicked. God's way with the world, not simply with Israel, is the way of mercy in the face of deserved judgment. Jonah 2000's emphasis added, as God states through the Apostle James, Mercy triumphs over judgment. James 2:13. You can't run from God. The story begins with Jonah's call by God to go to Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, founded by Nimrod, the great-grandson of Noah. Genesis 10:8-12. Like so many others, Jonah didn't want to go. But unlike any other recorded scriptural examples of God's true servants, Jonah not only refused to go, but he actually tried to run from God. Jonah later gives his reason as objection to God's inclination to show mercy, Jonah 4:2, as this could result in Nineveh, Israel's enemy, being shown mercy if they repented at his preaching. But Jonah was to learn that when God gives his servants a job to do, he expects them to carry it out. And of course, you can't run from God. As King David wrote, "Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, i.e. Sheol, the grave, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning, and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me." Psalm 139:7-10. Jonah surely knew these verses, as he was familiar with the Psalms demonstrated in the next reading, and yet he tried to defy them by fleeing across the sea to Tarshish. The name means to smelt, and thus the city was associated with the metal trade. The furthest known metal-producing port in the 8th century BC was Tartessus, in Spain. Most believe this port was Jonah's destination. The identification is not vital, however. What is key is that metal-producing areas along the Mediterranean were in the opposite direction from Nineveh. Bible Reader's Companion, note on 1:3. In any case, it represents the farthest place known to the people of ancient Israel. It is similar to going to the ends of the earth. In depth, Jonah, a reluctant missionary, Nelson Study Bible, sidebar on Jonah 1. Obviously, it was not far enough. Indeed, there's no place so far as to place us out of the reach of God. Ironically, it is this fact that will also save Jonah from death in the sea. God can use all sorts of means to get his servants to do his will. In this case, he brought the real problem of Jonah's attitude and disobedience into the open. Not only did it force Jonah to carry out his task, but it had a profound impact on the sailors he sailed with. Jonah 1:16. The Bible Reader's Companion notes, even out of fellowship with God, Jonah had an evangelistic impact on the sailors. His admission that he was the reason why God brought the great storm, his demand the sailors throw him overboard, the sudden stilling of the storm as soon as Jonah left the ship, all these witnessed to God's greatness, and led the crew to greatly fear the Lord, and to make vows to him. It's a mistake to assume just because God is using someone in others' lives that that person must be godly. The Lord uses imperfect agents, and even some who are actively disobeying him, at the very time they serve as channels of grace. So give God the glory. And do not hold his servants in awe, as though what God does is a testimony to some human being's holiness's note on Jonah 1:616. Of course, recognizing a pattern of unrighteous conduct would be a reason to question or even reject someone as a spiritual leader. The point is that God can use anyone, righteous or not, to direct others to his truth. This in no way removes the responsibility all of us have to make sure that the spiritual leaders we follow are godly and doctrinally on track. Returning to the account, we next come to the saga of the great fish, as translated from the Hebrew. When Christ refers to this incident in the New Testament, it is interesting to note the Greek translation of what he said. Rather than the common Greek word for fish, ichthus, another word, ketos, is used. This is the same word the Greek Septuagint uses in its translation of Jonah. The King James Version renders this word in the New Testament as whale, but it literally denotes a huge fish, a sea monster. Vine's Complete Expository Dictionary of Old and New Testament Words, 1985, New Testament section, whale. This does not necessarily rule out a whale, as the word may allow for that. Many people have said that a whale could not have swallowed a man, and, even if it had, he wouldn't have survived. Yet the evidence against the whale story is far from conclusive. Note this section from the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia. While the throats of most whales are too narrow to swallow a man, the cachalot or sperm whale can. Even other species of whales could preserve a man alive. were the man able to reach the great laryngeal pouch. This structure, with its thick, elastic walls, is large enough to contain a man, and to supply him with air for breathing. A.J. Wilson, Princeton Theological Review, 25th, 1941. 636 records the case of a man swept overboard by a harpooned sperm whale in the vicinity of the Falkland Islands. The whale was eventually killed and cut apart. After 3 days, the missing sailor was found in the animal's stomach, unconscious. He was successfully revived, although the skin of his face, neck and hands was bleached by the whale's gastric juices, Jonah, Book of, 1982. Still, another source argues, until the Bible was translated into English, no one had ever heard the story of Jonah and the whale. For the great fish that's mentioned in Jonah was considered by ancient and medieval scholars to be a sea monster, and was designated accordingly in Greek and Latin Bibles. This interpretation is faithful to Greek kitos, which designates a sea dragon or monster. Just what creature was in the mind of the original writer of Jonah's saga remains a matter of conjecture. Probability points to some semi-mythical sea serpent, rather than to the shark or humpback whale. Many 20th century versions and translations reject whale and use sea monster or dragon in rendering the ancient account. Webb Garrison, Strange Facts About the Bible, 1968-2000s, pp. 103,104. This is not out of the question. It may even be that God specially created this creature, as we are explicitly told that he had prepared a great fish, verse 17. Indeed, with other biblical references to Leviathan, a sea serpent and clear type of Satan, the great dragon, Revelation 12:9, and considering the idea of being in his clutches as a type of death for sin, this seems a very strong parallel with Christ's death. In any event, the expositor's Bible commentary adds this important comment. As the type of fish is not identified, and the story is told in the most general terms, we should avoid making the incident, which in itself is physically possible, more difficult by our interpretation. Jesus placed it alongside the even greater miracle of his own resurrection. What we must do, however, is find an adequate spiritual reason for so great a miracle. Introductory notes on Jonah. This is a reference to Matthew 12:39-40. The scribes and Pharisees asked Jesus for a sign to verify his claims. He responded, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." Many theologians, believing that Christ died Friday afternoon and rose Sunday morning, interpret the period to mean parts of 3 days and just two nights, a little bit of Friday afternoon, Friday night, all day Saturday, Saturday night, and a little bit of Sunday morning. However, it is illogical to interpret the Hebrew of Jonah in the light of an unproven theory from New Testament meant times. Typical of mainstream Christian thinking is this statement from Adam Clark's commentary, that days and nights do not, among the Hebrews, signify complete days and nights of 24 hours, cs. R. 16, compared with chap. V. 1, Judge, sec. C. 17-18. Our Lord lay in the grave one natural day, and part of two others, and it is most likely that this was the precise time that Jonah was in the fish's belly, 1967. Note on Jonah, 1:17. Actually, the references he quotes do not prove his point. Note this accurate explanation from the Companion Bible. The fact that 3 days is used by Hebrew idiom for any part of 3 days and three nights is not disputed, because that was the common way of reckoning, just as it was when used of years. Three or any number of years was used inclusively of any part of those years, as may be seen in the reckoning of the reigns of any of the kings of Israel and Judah. But when the number of nights is stated as well as the number of days, then the expression ceases to be an idiom and becomes a literal statement of fact. Moreover, as the Hebrew day began at sunset, the day was reckoned from one sunset to another, the 12 hours in the day, John 11:9, being reckoned from sunrise, and the 12 hours of the night from sunset. An evening morning was thus used for a whole day of 24 hours, as in the first chapter of Genesis. Hence the expression, a night and a day, in 2 Corinthians 11:2, 5, denotes a complete day, genothemeron. When Esther says Esther 4:16, fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, she defines her meaning as being 3 complete days, because she adds being a Jewess, night or day. And when it is written that the fast ended on the third day 5:1, the third day must have succeeded and included the third night. Hence, when it says that Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights, Jonah 1, it means exactly what it says. And that this can be the only meaning of the expression in Matthew 12:40-16.4 app, then 144. And then apparently,